Okay, so just briefly to review what we did yesterday. So yesterday we focused on the relevance of the discussion of the Eseret HaShvatim for the purposes of the status of Shemitah B'Zman Hazeh, noting that, again, the Gemara assumes that Yovel at least, and Yovel seems to be connected to Shemitah, probably all of Shemitah, but according to Kesef Mishnah and the Rambam, only Shemitah Ksafim. And therefore, the principle Kol Yoshevei Aleha will dictate whether or not we are chayef in, right? Whether the status of Shemitah nowadays is daraita or not, right? Good. And therefore, we saw that according to the Ramban and the Chatam Sofer, this might hang on the Machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in terms of whether the Eseret HaShvatim are coming back. Because according to the Chatam Sofer specifically, the way he understood the phrase Kol Yoshevei Aleha was rov possible, and therefore the question of possible is defined by whether or not they're coming back. If you think that they're not coming back, like Rabbi Akiva, then the small representative sample that came back in the time of Ezra, or even earlier, came back in the time of Yirmiyahu, right, was all there was, and therefore when Ezra came back, that was Zoza, that's what there is, and therefore potentially you could have Shemitah d'oraisa, in the time of Ezra, on the time of Hill, nowadays, etc. If, on the other hand, according to some Sefer, you pass on Rabbi Eliezer, which he does, and you think they're coming back, then the fact that we're missing the majority of the Eseret HaShvatim means that it is not Daraita. Well, let's be careful. Means it is not Daraita, which, again, according to Rov Rishon is Darabanan, but according to Ravid, according to Meiri, according to Balamor, which, again, are all unified, meaning this is a Shita that emerged in Provence, right? All those people are Provençal. Yes, remember, southern France has its own identity, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we talked about this. We've been through this. Yeah. Rivet was like the Gadol of Provence early on. Yeah. Okay, good. So it's not even Darabanan, it's a Midat Chasid. Right? So that was where we had left off. And what we did, what we said is that we would take a little bit of time, one day, to focus in on this question of the Eseret HaShvatim. Okay, so again, to remind ourselves where we are historically, someone remind me so that I make sure you remember Tanakh, right? The Ten Shvatim, they are the Northern Kingdom, also known as Ephraim, and they are exiled, majority of them, but not all of them, by what kingdom?
Assyria.
Very good. By Assyria. Okay? Not Sancheiriv, that's later, that's the time of Chizkiyo. I took to Gladpil Neser. Yeah, I just said that. Yes. I think it's Tiglathpil Neser now. Yeah, that's what I just said. I said Tiglathpil Neser. So he kicks them out, the majority of them. Okay. So as I said, the key Gemara in terms of understanding their status here is number 5. We're Amar of Yehuda Maravasi. Ovei kochavim shekidesh bizman hazeh choshishin lekidushin. If someone intermarries nowadays, we have to be concerned that even though kidushin do not take effect between a Jew and a non-Jew, nowadays it will take effect because you have to be worried that this person that you think is a non-Jew, Christina, I don't know, come up with a very non-Jewish name. Okay. Sure, Christina Christian, great. Yala. Despite the fact that, you know, her name is quite not Jewish, and she's a very devout Catholic, she might be Jewish, because who knows? Maybe she's the great whatever grandchild of... let's see. If we are, Nagid, we have, let's say there's, I don't know, 15 million Jews in the world, whatever it is, I don't know exactly, right? And that's with all the persecution of the years, and we represent 2 Shvatim. So, Bon Nagid, even if they faced, right, similar numbers, if they'd be, what, 75 million? It's been 2,500 years, you know, more. 3,000 years. It's been a long time. But if it's Barach, right? If there's right? Daughter after daughter eventually, so. Oh, one second. So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to be worried. Shema me'asar d'ashratim. Then the Gemara says, I have a call to parish miruba parish. Didn't you do this Gemara this morning? Okay, fine. So if I call to parish miruba parish. But wait a second. There's a rule that whenever something separates, you're allowed to assume halachically that it comes from the majority. And the majority of the world is not Jewish. It's not from the Sarashvatim. So the Gemara says, no, beduchta de kviye. It must be a case where they were kavua, and there's this magic rule in halacha, which is that, right, there's this magic rule in halacha, which goes like follows, as follows, okay? If you have 10 stores, okay, you have 10 stores on a street, of which 9 are kosher and 1 is not, and you find a piece of meat on the floor, are you allowed to eat it? So the answer is, first of all, ew. But halachically, are you allowed to eat it? Fine, it's a wrapped up, right, packaged, fine, the halacha is, yes, because called the parish, meruba parish, right? Okay, but what about if you go into a store and buy a burger? Then are you allowed to eat it? No, because it's kavua. Because the rule is that if something is parish, it separates, then you go by rov. And if it's kavua, it's in place, then we always treat it kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. Even though it's 9 kosher stores and 1 not kosher, when you go into the store, so there it's kavua, it's standing in place, you have to relate to it as it's a 50-50 doubt, and therefore you can't eat it. No, yes, but so it says here it's a case where it's kavua. Now, what's the difference between kavua and rov? Not a shir for now. Okay, very complicated topic. So the Gemara then says that's the position of Yehuda. But ikad amri kia, right? But then the Gemara brings Shmuel's position. Kamir gave to Shmuel when they said this in front of Shmuel. He said, Amarle lo zazum misham ad sha'asa ovdei kochavim gmurim. They did not move from that place until they decided, they deemed them non-Jews. Shene'emar, as it says, Bashem Bagadu, they committed treason against God, Kibanim Zarim Yoladu. And they gave birth to foreign children. So from here. Well, what? No, from sitting in the Beit Din, right? Like, they sat down, and they discussed it, and they said, they are nisht Jewish. They are nisht Jewish. Okay? So, like I said, this became a very major question, both in terms of what does it mean in the context of the original Seder Shvatim, and then, can we derive anything from that status to later apostates? Didn't I say yesterday this is what we're dealing with? So, Kobe says, one second, I don't understand, what are you talking about? Once a Jew, always a Jew. So Kobe is very good, is channeling Rashi, right? Because Rashi, right, based on the Gemara in number 2, where it says, Chata Yisrael, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Aval Bishachata. The rule is, no matter how much you sin, Yisrael hu. And Rashi takes this as his view that you can never lose your Jewishness. Once a Jew, always a Jew. And once a Jew, always a Jew. Okay. So now let's go. Now, there are those who say that, what does it mean when the Gemara says that Lo Zazu Misham? So some say, right, if you're like Rashi, then how would you read the Gemara? Right? Meaning, they're not non-Jewish. It's like, look, there are several billion people in the world. There might be people in the Aseret HaShvatim, but for practical purposes, we don't make you worry about it because you're allowed to rely on Rov. It doesn't mean they made them non-Jewish. It means we're just not worried about it anymore, right? They're batel in the world. What it is, it is. Right? But we're allowed to rely on Rov, we're allowed to rely on Bittel, we're allowed to rely on whatever. But this Gemara is not really telling you that there's such a thing as losing your status of Jewishness, right? So you could read the Gemara that way. However, right, there were those who said no, right? That this Gemara really means that there is a possibility, at least in principle, to lose Jewishness. That in principle, there is the possibility of losing Jewishness. Okay? Right? One of the earliest articles that surveyed these positions was a 1976 article, I think, by Gerald Blitzstein called Who is Not a Jew? It's a very good article. It's a very good article. He was, what? It means they would be not Jewish, correct. Convert. They'd have to convert. Correct. Correct. One second. Right. Right. And I will let me just read you his right a brief. I have the article open, but he says as follows. Right, he says, it must be admitted in any case that Samuel's explication of the fate of the 10 tribes indicates that some rabbis were willing, in theory at least, to consider more radical possibilities. In the case of both the 10 tribes and the Samaritans, I'm going to leave out the Shomronim for now. Finally, the sources speak of the deliberate act of expulsion or the like. The Jewishness of neither group simply lapsed, right? So it's not a lapsed Kedusha, right? There is this idea of stripping people of Jewishness, which is distinct from apostates where, right, that's not exactly the case. Furthermore, right, the Gemara is really talking about a very specific case of a group, but it's not totally clear in terms of, right, individuals, right, where by individuals we don't necessarily have the same evidence. Now, the main piece of evidence, and then we'll talk about it, that the people on the Rashi side took were from number three, right, because number two is more of a hashkafic source, but number three says as follows, that if you have a mumar, you have an apostate who marries a Jew, the hadar ben mekadesh bat Yisrael, if you have a mumar who marries a Jew, Yisrael mumar karinan bay, he's still a Jew, he's just an apostate, and therefore, kiddushav kiddushin, his marriage works. And then the position I mentioned from Rashi, this is in a tshuva, kovayin aleph, sha'af Yisrael mishumad l'ritzono shekidesh, even a mishumad of his own free will, who marries kiddushav kiddushin, his kiddushin work. Shne'emar chata Yisrael, afal pisha chata Yisrael. Afal pisha chata Yisrael. So in the medieval period, right, based on this Gemara that says that a mumar who gets married is a Jew, and this hashkafic line of afal pisha chata Yisrael, one school that arose was the school of Rashi, which became dominant ad hayom, which is, as Kobe put it, very succinctly, and he probably didn't make it up, right? But he's probably heard it from others. Once a Jew, always a Jew. Once a Jew, always a Jew. And therefore they felt that the Aseret HaShvatim, either they thought that the Aseret HaShvatim, even in that context, it was more of a halachic statement that we're not choshesh for their kedushin, but not really that we made them not Jewish. Or maybe they thought that there was some magic in the Aseret HaShvatim that you could do that. But fundamentally, they said, once a Jew, always a Jew. Once a Jew, always a Jew. One second. We're going to come back to it. We're going to come back to it. We're getting there. That's what we're doing. We're getting there. Okay? And despite the fact that this is the view we all grew up on, right? There are a bunch of people who argue on it. Many people said nisht. Now, if you fully want to understand, you have to realize there were really two groups. There were the Talmidei Chachamim who argued on it, and there was also the Hamona. And even though there were many Talmidei Chachamim who passed on the Rashi, you should know that throughout the medieval period and the modern period, there were many communities who were really angry at people who apostatized and didn't want to treat them as Jews. And therefore, when they came back, they forced them to go to mikveh again, convert again. Yes, that was the point. Right? In some cases, they went further. So, you know about the smicha controversy? The great smicha controversy of... The great smicha controversy of the 16th century, late 15th or 16th, whatever, was that at some point, the Rambam has this suggestive thing that even though smicha is dead, you can bring back real smicha if rov rabbanim or all the rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael agree to give you smicha. You can reignite smicha. Okay, so based on this, the Mari Beirav in Sfat decided that first of all meant rov, and he decided that he was going to do it, right? And he did, and he gave himself smicha, gave Rabbi Yosef Karo smicha, right? Okay, this was a bit short-lived because you can have a real Beis Din, you can give the death penalty, you can judge Dine Knesso, you can bring, you know, all sorts of things. I'll get to what the real Nafkamina was in a second. However, then they tried to get the rabbis of Yerushalayim on board, the Maral Bach and the Rabbi Chaviv, and that didn't go over so well. The Maral Bach was not a fan of this, and he said, not only am I not a fan of it, but I read the Rambam as saying, Rove, it's not Rove, but it's Kol, and since I don't like it, and I'm a rabbi in Israel, so it doesn't work. They went into a machloket for a long time. It was really quite bad. The tshuvot between them are really amongst the most vicious tshuvot. They're amongst the most vicious ones in the universe. Yes. The tshuvot are very, very long. I, at some point, copied the tshuvot of the Maral Bach onto a PDF, on a Word file, single spaced. It's like 101 pages. It's quite long. It's quite one of the tshuvot. One of the tshuvot. You can. Go ahead. There are a lot of... I'm not going to do it in sheer. It'll take forever. It's a wonderful tshuva. It's quite harsh. They really hated each other. They eventually, like... you know, at some point drove each other out of the country by telling the authorities to them. They have all types of fascinating insults in there. You know, things like, because at some point the Mari Beirav suggested that you could create smicha with, once you had a Beis Din, if you had three people on the Beis Din, even if one of them had smicha, that was enough to bequeath more smicha. You didn't need three musmachim to give smicha, you needed one, right? And then, whatever, Maral Bach is not so thrilled with this, and he has this line where he's like, aha, I see. One mind, three bodies, all work together. Yeah. What religion are we talking about? Yeah, they're like very interesting. What's going on in here? Anyways, so but part of the Svara, why did I bring this up? Because what was one of the motivations for this? Because many of the people living in Svat came from Spain. Spain. And what did many of them, which many of them therefore had done what?
Converted.
And they felt guilty. And they said, hey, I converted to Christianity, I'm going to get kares. And they said, aha! But the Gemara says that there's a way of getting out of kares. How do you get out of kares? You get malchus. And they said, but you can't give malchus unless you have a Beis Din.
So let's recreate smicha, and we'll get a Beis Din together, and then they will be us.
And we will get our chelik and olam haba back. Right? That was part of their argument, right? That was what they wanted. Okay? So sometimes it wasn't just that people were angry at apostates. Sometimes the people who had apostated even under duress were angry at themselves, right? So there was a lot of, and especially in medieval Ashkenaz, where, you know, the routine thing to do when someone was threatening you with conversion was die. So halavai was only die, but often it got worse, and it was to actively murder your children to prevent them from being converted. And in one particular story, the person who tells the story of how he killed all his entire family, first his kids and his wife and then himself, and sprinkled their blood on the parochet to make it clear to God that they were treating themselves as a karban. The medieval Ashkenaz was quite a crazy place during the Crusades. So people they did a lot of very controversial things. But therefore the people who converted to Christianity, you know, people weren't necessarily so happy with them when that was how committed they were to Yiddishkeit. So, you know. But let's focus not so much on the Hamunah, but let's focus on the rabbis, okay? So, in addition to Rashi's position, two other medieval positions. Well, sure, in the very modern period, but you know, we live in a different world. But in the medieval period, this was pretty bad. I don't know, hundreds of years of changing approaches. Yeah, there's many reasons. Look at them. for the millionth time, we're going to do this misudar. Okay? We're going to go through the sources. You can jump later on and read whatever you want. I have read hundreds and hundreds of pages on this. Right? I told you, I have a book sitting. I read Kanner Vogel's book on the topic. Okay? But we're going to go misudar in order. Now, in addition to the position of Rashi, who thought that you couldn't lose Jewishness, two other positions arose in the medieval period. And they were? Now, what are the approaches? Don't give me names. What are the approaches? And no, the Meiri is summarizing the Gaonic position. Stop calling it the Meiri's position. I've said this five times. No, the Meiri is a summarizer. It's the Gaonic position. Right? This is a much earlier than him. What are the possibilities, logically speaking? Yes. So one possibility is, right, what's the exact punk, the opposite position of Rashi? All the way to the other extreme. Not allowed. You lose your Jewish. It's not allowed. You lose your Jewishness if you apostatize. You lose your Jewishness. You're not allowed. No one said you're allowed to do it. One position was you apostatize, you stop being Jewish.
So basically, you just have to say, I'm a
kofar. And that's it. No. You convert to another religion. Goodbye. Yeah, presumably that wouldn't work for this, right? That wouldn't be enough to remove Jewishness, right? There, seemingly there would have to be a commitment of another to another system. What? And that's just what all these, right? All the early sources are assuming, right? Yes, I don't know. They don't talk about it. I don't know what you would say. Okay, so. You don't have to? No. Presumably this was real commitment. Right? We're not talking about a joke. We're talking about people who actually converted. Like, Maisa, like they really became Christians. I'm not talking about someone who, right? We're talking about people, Mahadrin, right? We can start talking about details, but in principle, right? These were people who started living as Christians. Right? They got baptized, they went to church, they did the sacraments, they did whatever. No. Not the Assyrians brought them. Right? Remember I said, jumping forward in history, right, now to the halakhic question of the implications of this, and we'll come back to the Sefer Shvatim, right, there was the second view who basically assumed, right, well, I'll put it differently. The Gemara in the Sefer Shvatim, the way they read it was that, no, at some point you stop your Jewish identity, you stop being Jewish. You're right, you know, the truth is, atheism might be enough, but I don't know if it would be. Depends. If someone's an atheist identifies as a Jew, right, presumably this doesn't apply to them. Right, the whole point here was that they took the Aseret HaShvatim as a proof that at some point people can stop being Jewish, right? But if someone still calls himself a Jew and doesn't actually identify as something else, right, they're just a bad Jew, right? Right, the whole point of the Aseret HaShvatim, right, I mean, the whole point of the Aseret HaShvatim was that, right, the way the others read it was, no, the Aseret HaShvatim, they actually, like, become another nation, right? They went, they moved to another nation, they become assimilated to other nations, and now they are a Babylonians, they're Philistines, they're Mashiach, right? And then, some of the Rishonim took that farther and said, it's not only true they started as Shvatim, but an individual who embraces Christianity, and now you ask him, who are you? And he says, I'm a Christian. He is now not Jewish, right? Now, presumably, right, someone who says, I'm an atheist Jew, right, it sounds like in these sources they need to, right, I take on a new identity, right? If someone said I'm an atheist and therefore I no longer identify as a Jew in any way, shape, or form, right, not religious, not socially, not whatever, maybe that would be the same according to the Shita. I don't know. Maybe. Yechaleo. Okay, so that was the second position. One second. What's the third possibility? Third possibility, and then we'll flesh it out. Wait, what's in between? Is you once a Jew, always a Jew, but your children are not. Right? That was the middle position, was that because you were born a Jew, right, you can't lose your Jewishness. But, let's say a woman who converted to Christianity, her child is now from womb, right, from the womb is already in a not-Jewish context.
She's still Jewish, right?
Ah, right, so there arose this middle position, which is that you can't really lose Jewishness, but you can basically diminish your Jewishness such to the point that you can't pass it on. Right? That was essentially the position that emerged. Right? And therefore, what? Right.
So if you don't convert, then it's a problem. As long as you're still Jewish,
Correct. Right. Okay? So that was the third position. Yeah. Can we read them now? Let's read them inside. Okay? Let's read some of these positions inside. So look at the Meiri, okay? He's quoting earlier positions, but yes, he's a particularly clear instantiation of it, which is why I gave you number six. V'shema tomar shema mina bano tu sheba ha-goyel ehem kabbalah ha-dadam ha-lotum banav shegalu boto shah ha-shein echliu eretzmam ha-chamdu binavel shel yeshudam kofetz aleihen. So he said some people, right, all these cases. So he said some people said the reason we're not worried about Jewish women floating around and having Jewish children is because these women who went into Galut made sure to make themselves disgusting and never married, and therefore never had children. And therefore there are no people, right? That's how some people read this Gemara. And he says, and there were some people who said, no, they actually drank something that made them infertile, right? Now, all these positions, what are they assuming? You can't lose Jewishness, so why would we not be worried about Jews floating around? Because we assume empirically they're not floating around, right? Which is fascinating historically, but not, but halachically, that's not very interesting. The Yesh Mefarshim, Shenivka Beit Klitatam, Li'inui Haderech, Achel Yerud Leklod Taber. Some say when they went into Galut, they were so tortured, right, that what happened? They became physically incapable of conceiving, okay? V'lo od el shekabal hayta biyadam shekol otam shenitmu bem nitmu legamrei anashim v'namim shel beit din shebo'otu hador asam goyim gemurim shel yotam b'chlal dinei Yisrael klal. But then he gets his fourth position. He says, okay, the first three interpretations of this sugya are what? That fundamentally they were Jewish, the Aseret HaShvatim. But there was a mesorah that for one reason or another, and they never had kids. Right? They became too ill, right? They became infertile, da da da. Fourth daya, Shmuel's position is what? They stopped halachically being Jewish. No, they had kids, but when people mix entirely into the non-Jewish world, they cease to be Jewish. And then he says, umikan. Okay, now, I'm going to point out that anyone who says this is the Meiri's position alone, again, and doesn't read the fact that he says, Umikan hayuk tzat rabotai chochichin. And from here, some of my rabbis hesitated to say, right? It is clear this is not a new position. He's not saying me, right? If you want a nice, long, traditional summary, you can go to Rabbi Yaffin's. You know Rabbi Yaffin's Yavama? I'm going to pause for 1 second.
I think we should call it Zeringo, not just Zeringo. Why? Because it's like Bingo, but it's Zeringo. And good job. Thank you. No, it's perfect. Zeringo.
Okay, so in the Mozart or Cook Ritva, this is what a normal Masechta looks like. Okay? They hired Rabbi Yaffin to do Yevamot, and he didn't tell them that what he really wanted to do was write his own sefer in Yevamot in the footnotes. So this is the Masechta Rav Kook Ritva on Yevamot. So Rabbi Yaffin wrote a book. So this is what a normal Masechta looks like, where here is the text, these are a decent amount of footnotes. This is what Rabbi Yaffin. Text, footnotes, and then the book ends, the Ritva, this is volume one, by the way, of two, right? These are two volumes. The book ends here. These are essays that Rabbi Yaffin then wrote in addition to the footnotes he wrote, okay? But for anyone who's interested, i.e. you, okay? Fine. He wrote essays in addition, right? Okay, so, yeah, he was quite interesting. He apparently just sat there in the mirror like all day, like learning Torah, writing Kiddushim, and smoking, and then died at like 35. Right? Like, well, you're Rabbi Yaffin. So, Rabbi Yaffin, Vega, I have to find it, so it's Highlandness, Where is it? One of these chapters. Here we go. In this one. Here we go. See? This chapter here, in tiny font, that goes on forever. Here are his makarot on this question. No. Here he goes, as a president, you can read, sending you a dollar, and it'll be out there. Good luck. Okay? Good. What? Enjoy! You think I didn't beat this when I was on your phone? What? Really? Of course I did. No, Zach, you remind me of me sometimes. Okay? It doesn't bother me, but I do what people did to me, which is just read! Right? Go! Research! Go! Yalla. Fine. So he says, Mikana yuktsat rabotai chokhin lomar. Sikol nishumai bizman azeh goi gamurhu. It's Simon Yudalit. Some of my rebellions say, based on this, that a mishumad, right, an apostate is a goy, the ein chosh on the kedushav, the af ktsat chachmei ashkenaz yigidili. It's great to see you. Hanukkah Sameach. You got everyone you know with? Great. Okay, let's all be in touch. The af ktsat chachmei ashkenaz yigidili b'shem gidole rabbanem linin chalitza. Shekol shenafla yevama lifnei yavam mishumad sheitzrich chalitza. Vim kvar haya mishumad b'shash enasam nitkatsha zu leachav enetzrich chalitza sheagdat ken nitkatsha. And he said, I heard some people, therefore he said, that if a brother was already a mishumad, when his brother got married, there is no need for yibam or chalitza. Okay. And if you look at the halacha gedolah, this is already the gonim. What does he say? One second. Look, he says, "Kuti shekideish choshen lekidushav." The kuti himself, you worry about his kedushin. V'hilchata, but then what he said, "Bar mishuma didyaled migoya mikadesh lo tafsin lekidushin." The child is not Jewish. Mishuma gufe tafsi kedushin delay. My taima, mishuma di hoder bei mikadesh tafsin lekidushin. It's very simple. Meshuvan himself, what does he have the option of? Doing tshuva, which means he's at least Jewish in potential. Right? Right? He's either Jewish or Jewish in potential. Right? Because he was born a Jew, so he can always come back. Right? But Bar Meshumad, but a child of Meshumad, was born. Right? And therefore is a goy. Right? And what's his proof? Bashem Bagadu. Kibanim Zaram Yuladu. The same Pasuk. Right? And what's his proof? Udika Amrinan lo zazum misham atcha asum goyim gmurim. Because they said by the Yetzirat HaShvatim that they didn't move until they made them goyim. Dafka binayu. And how does he read it? Not the first generation. They're children. Aval inhulo. Right? Aval inhulo. Okay? So now we have three positions. Let me just, right? In terms of the Yetzirat HaShvatim, we have three positions. Either the reason we're not worried about their condition is we're not really worried that they had kids, or we rely on Rove, or whatever. But fundamentally, can you lose Jewishness? No. Other extreme is no, you can lose Jewishness. You can lose Jewishness, right? That was what happened. They left, they lost Jewishness. A later apostate can lose Jewishness. And the third possibility, or Haigon, the Hospitalot, right? Is that what? An apostate can never fully lose Jewishness. Maybe they temporarily lose some sort of Jewishness, but they can always come back, and therefore, at core, they're Jewish. But their kids who were born already with a non-Jewish identity in the milieu, they're not Jewish. Now, I'm going to quickly throw out some nafkaminas, and then I'm going to come. Now, nafkaminas to this were marriage and divorce, right? Right, this was a very important halachic discussion in medieval period because, right, again, for sure, right? But what were they arguing about? So they were arguing often about marriage and divorce, but not just what you think, right? Not just, it was also, let's say, people were married, and then, no, and then their spouse apostatizes, and now runs away and doesn't want to give a get, because now the person, now the husband is Catholic. Yes, you can. No, but it erases now, just like you can't be married to a non-Jew, right? According to the extreme Shito, they didn't need a get because it would dissolve it. Right? You understand this was, it wasn't just we were thinking now intermarriage. It was one spouse would convert, right? And then would run away and leave their spouse chained. And who was going to force them? They were the, right? Remember, right? The Jews were the minority. The husband converted to join the church. Right? Right? It was a great move politically, right? Economically, right? For sure. That you think that wasn't why people did it sometimes. I kid you not. What do you mean? We have all types of things. We have tshuvot from the medieval period where people said, my kid threatened that if I'm too hard on him, right? I punish them too much, he's going to apostatize, right? Like, this was the thing people did. I hate my wife, apostatize. My parents are bothering me, I'll show them, apostatize. Right? This is things people did. Right? Yes! Yes! So, you can imagine, right? People would say, listen, my parents are jerks to me, right? Life is hard as a Jew. I'll show everyone, right? People did this, right? A very common problem was not just marriage and divorce, but was Yibum, right? Because that was even worse. Let's say you married a good, firm person, but, as Miri said, but his brother is a jerk and had apostatized. Right? And now, God forbid, this young woman, her husband dies without children, which is tragic enough. And then what happens? Her jerk of a brother-in-law, who is, you know, was born, you know, Yankel, probably not because medieval France, but whatever, was born, whatever, he was born Baruch, and now he's Benedict, right? Right? I mean, Benedict happened to be a Jewish name because of that, but for these purposes, right? Right, because it means Baruch. Baruch Spinoza was Benedict Spinoza, right? Spinoza, his Hebrew name was Baruch. The translation of Baruch is Benedict. Yes, it means Benedict is the Latin-based name for Baruch. Yes, just like Jonathan is Yonatan. My Hebrew name is Yonatan. My English name is Jonathan. So Benedict is Baruch. Whoa, mind blown, right? Yeah. Just like the opposite, like a curse is a malediction, right? Right? A benediction and a malediction. Yes, there you go. Fine. But this would happen a lot, right? This would happen a lot. And yes, does it happen nowadays? Yes. Rav Amital once had a case where he was marrying someone, I think, from affiliated with yeshiva, and the guy in yeshiva is obviously from, but his brother, right, they were like, I guess they were olim from the Soviet Union, his brother was a viciously anti-religious communist. And he said, like he said, and this couple, the husband was in Sahal, was about to go to war. So, like, it is possible he'll die, right, young. And the brother said, if you die in war, I will be ma'agin, your wife, right? I will not be involved in this religious practice. I will not do it, right? Which was a mess, because what are you going to do, right? Before the wedding, right? Right, so Arayom, you have these problems. Yeah, that's not great. No, so he ended up actually doing conditional tonight.
Yes.
On right, conditional marriage. Yes. They, not getting married, but they actually did a conditional marriage. What? No. No, you can do a conditional marriage.
Or they could just do a conditional marriage.
You could do that too, but they did a conditional marriage, I believe, in this case. Right? So therefore, there were people who believed, right, that... You can do that. We're married unless. We're married unless. If this happens, then the kids are born out of marriage. Retroactively. Yes. No, that's it. They're just married. They're retroactively married out of wedlock, which is not a big deal in halacha.
Okay. it's not?
No. There's no status to them. There's nothing wrong. Like, there's no, it doesn't inherit in the kids at all.
They don't have to follow his roots
or... No, they're still their father's son, biologically.
No,
nothing. That's the thing. But like, retroactively, right?
They lose their kahuna,
right? If they were on
him? Why? No. Why? It was out of wedlock. Out of wedlock in halacha doesn't create status like that. No. This is a very Christian idea, right? Right? The word, right? The translation of mamzer means something very different in English than it does in halacha, right?
Yes.
Right? So these were different things. Now, there were people who believed things like, right? Again, there were all types of middle positions, like, and then there were also the opposite positions, which were worse, which were if you apostatized, then you were still married and you couldn't give a get if you wanted to, right? So this was the position of Nussan of Rome, right? Where you were Jewish enough that you needed, that your marriage stood, but not Jewish enough to be involved in writing a get, and therefore your wife was trapped forever, right? What? Until you do tshuva, correct. Right, as opposed to like Rav Nachman Nigon, who said no. Right, so you had all types of mixing positions. Now you also, I will just note, you had a few localized positions. Right, so there were some people who said you are Jewish, but you're still not going to be zokek liyibum. Why? Right, meaning if a brother-in-law apostatized, he wouldn't make his sister-in-law do yibum, and they said it's a technical reason within yibum, which is that the point of yibum is lahakim shem achid. Is to carry on the legacy of the brother. And if someone apostatizes, he may be Jewish, but he's definitionally not going to be able to carry on his brother's legacy. So, right, if someone apostatizes, his wife would need a get, but the sister-in-law would not need chalitza. Right, so that was also a position that would appear amongst the Rishonim, but that seems to be a localized halacha with an Yibum. And then there were even more localized things like ribbis, right, where like ribbis, we're lending people money with interest, doesn't seem to be about Jewishness. It also requires osem asamcha, people who act Jewishly, right? And therefore, it might be that they're fully Jewish, but for the types of things that, you know, entail people acting properly, right, they would not. And yeah, there were also nafkaminas in terms of Yerusha, right? Do the kids, right? Can you Yorish from your father who apostatized? Can kids who apostatize inherit from their father, right? So these were all, right, these were all... discussions that were brought up.
If you have two sisters, one of them was raised as a Jew and one of them was raised as not Jewish, so the fact that Allah appointed a Jew that she would not be considered Jewish, and then that sister converts back. So
she has to convert fully, right?
So would you be able to marry both sisters, or am I not? I'm just saying that a lot, or is it that like?
Potentially, no, potentially would, right? Because they're not halachically sisters, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, an extreme view of this for sure, right? Because they're really not Jewish. Yes, okay. Exactly. Now, there is the possibility, of course, right, which is the Ramah's position, and then I'll take Zach's follow-up questions. There is the possibility to say that in theory you can lose Jewishness, and that's what happened to the Aseret HaShvatim, but apostasy is different than what the Aseret HaShvatim did, right? Right, because basically all these positions saw some sort of, right, combination, right, that whatever you hold about the Aseret HaShvatim exists in potential for later, right, apostates. But if you look, for example, at the Ramah writes in 8, Umay de Amrinan, Ad Shasum Kutim Gemurim, Afil Me'abanot, Zeudafka Lebnei Aseret HaShvatim. Only the Aseret HaShvatim lost their Jewishness. Why? Because the pasuk says, "Dikra the Bashem Bagadu Alayu Ktiv." The pasuk that the basis in the Gemara isn't about a stam apostate; it's about the Aseret HaShvatim. V'lek l'nimor agder Yehuda namik Ktiv Bagdi Yehuda Shani Adam lo Ktiv Bashem Bagadu. Hachanami gabay Aseret HaShvatim mishum to begetatam evi tvei me'achrine gozar gadol apneihem, because their rebellion against God was to be generous. So there was a special gzeirat hakatuv that the Torah said. That the Aseret HaShvatim lose their Jewishness. The Afilu Banot, Masha In came Bedor Halalu, but it's not true of ours. Right? So there is a theoretical possibility to acknowledge that in the time of the Aseret HaShvatim, what it means is you lost your Jewishness, meaning to say, in principle, one can lose their Jewishness, but in practice, it has no relevance for our lives because it's not about modern apostates. Okay? So we're good as an overview of the positions. Like I said, I sent you a very short one just in the WhatsApp group from Ray Brody. If you want a very short one from what's it called? From J-Post. Do you want me to send you the longer Blitzstein article? Yeah, I'll put it in the WhatsApp group. Here, this is Gerald Blitzstein's Who Is Not a Jew. Okay? And he spells out some of the nafkaminas there, right? Let me read you his conclusion for a second. And he says, we have seen that the questions of the inalienability of Jewish status provoked a spectrum of replies in a variety of situations. We've been concerned fundamentally with the apostate since he alone among medieval Jews raised the question uncompromisingly by his very being. The historical setting in which the question was raised was the early Gaonic period. This is appropriate since that period saw mass conversion to Islam. It's also appropriate that the most uncompromising attempts to read the apostate out of the fold originates in this milieu. The attempt to read the apostate completely out of the fold did not succeed, however. It survives as an opinion on the fringe. Even apostate remained Jewish for the purposes of personal, i.e. marital status. This probably reflects a combination of factors. The seriousness of marriage and divorce in Jewish law, the presence of at least one explicit Talmudic statement affirming the Jewish personal status of the Mumar, the absence of Midrashic handles by which the apostate could be totally ejected. Finally, the collective disinclination completely to release the apostate from his covenantal responsibility and status. Right, part of the reason people didn't want to do this was because, right, as someone said before, you mean I can just convert to Christianity, then I don't have to, right? I don't have to worry about anything, right? I'm not, right? That does seem to come from it. This last factor, in my view, is the most significant. And then he goes through the different other areas, right? Yibum, Yerusha, usury. And in many of these subcategories, it was more common, right? It's like standard position that you're allowed to lend a Meshumad or a Mumar with Ribbis, right? Because they might be Jewish, but they're not Ose Maase Amcha. And the leg, right? Okay, so I gave you this article if you want to follow up on some of these positions. Zach, I'll take your questions. Then I'll move from the status issue to the question of should we be looking for the Aseret HaShvatim, which is, right, back not to the extension of this in terms of modern Jewish status, but going back to the Aseret HaShvatim itself question, right, what does this question about whether we think they're Jewish do to the question of whether we should be looking for the Aseret HaShvatim and whether they can possibly be Jews. Yeah.
What the Lord of all of these positions, like outside of the obvious, I really want to say that people on Jewish religious know the tendencies or exceptions, the idea that community is not a good thing. Like, what do you do in like gray areas? Like some of the Jews for Jesus, by some definition, qualify like
so I don't know. Right, I don't know, right? Meaning, again, the majority position that arose was that of was of Rashi, and therefore it's not a nafkamina. I don't know. And like I said, if you really, really want to see the extended view of this, you can read Professor Ephraim Kanterfogel's new book, Brothers from Afar, Rabbinic Approaches to Apostasy and Reversion in Medieval Europe, which is excellent. It is excellent. I read it in one day. One night. It was wonderful. Once I started, I'm like, I have to finish this. And I'll just tell you the chapters. It's Assessing the Ashkenazic Context, Establishing Boundaries, Immersion, Repentance, and Verification, the Effectiveness of Marriage and Participation in Chalitza, Economic Issues and the Implications of Other Areas of Jewish Law, Money Lending and Interest, Between Jews and Christians, Doctrinal Societal Changes, Reverting Apostates in Christian Spain, Sources and Strategies, the responsa and rulings of Israeline and its contemporaries, and conclusion. Okay? It is a very good book, and it is a very good treatment of the topic. Yeah. No. Because he told me I can't share it. No. No, I just told you. Stop asking me. I cannot share it. Right? He gave it to me to review, right? I cannot share it. God. Yes.
Are the Sadiqim by Susim and Karis?
What?
Are Sadiqim by Susim and Karis considered apostates?
Right, these are all going to be in, yeah, presumably, right? Not necessarily.
Because they still keep part of Judaism.
Oh, right. And then, right. Ariel Tucker asked me a little while ago. That was when I was looking through it. Of if you, right, do you, right, do you lose your Kohen and Levi status, right, if you do reconvert, right? So this is actually a discussion. Yeah. It's in Rav Nutrinoigon. Ravya, Simcha Spire, etc.
That they're not considered Jews anymore, and that
Who's them? Right. Remember, we talked about apostates and the Aseret HaShvatim. Which one?
The Aseret HaShvatim.
Yeah. Okay.
And and that they will come back when Mashiach comes.
Okay. So let's get to that. One second. So let's go back now. So far we've talked about this. Let's move now to the question of, right, of back to the Aseret HaShvatim. Now, if so now the question of nowadays, like whether it be the Ethiopians, right, or the B'nai Menashe, right? So this question has come up a lot over the last, 50 years or so, right, of different groups who claim to be descendants of the Aseret HaShvatim. So there's a few questions you have to ask in each of these groups, right? One is, if we paskin like Rabbi Akiva, then they're not coming back. So, right, they're not coming back. So it's not true. If you paskin, let's say, like the Ramah, right, then you would say, even if you could prove that you come from the Aseret HaShvatim, you're not Jewish. Right? Kal vachomer, right, because the Ramah at least said that for the actual Aseret HaShvatim.
So it's not even rogue paskins, rogue.
Right, they aren't Jewish. We deemed them not Jewish. And if you follow the more extreme positions, right, that's true of every apostate, Kal Vachomer, the paradigmatic case, which is the Aseret HaShvatim, right? And therefore, this was really brought up. So I gave you a few examples. So I gave you, for example, here, one article by Rav Menachem Waldman, who's been very involved in bringing back people who are descendants of the Aseret HaShvatim, right? So this is from the Fala Shmura. And if you look, right, he quotes, right, what do you have to ask? Well, right, he says, well, there were Achronim who said that you need, right, that their Kiddushin is only Lechomra, right, like the Maharaj Dam, right? So there are some Achronim who hold the old positions that they're not Jewish, right? Now he says, maybe they're not Jewish for the purpose of marriage, but maybe they are, right? But they don't need conversion, right? Meaning he assumes the majority view is that, right? He says, listen, you're right. If we paskin like the positions that they're not Jewish, then there would be no reason to be looking for these lost tribes, because even if you could biologically trace them back to the Aseret HaShvatim, they would not be Jewish. But his first point is that at least that I gave you, is that the majority view is that what? That they are Jewish. Right? Remember, in the end of the day, Rashi's view became dominant. Right? And he notes, right? And then if you look at Gimel or on the next page, he said, were there people who thought that you lost Jewishness? Yes. Right? However, he said, again, the majority view is the Yamin Sev, was that the Ha'ashkechan, the Chashivi Kishrom Ma'alyalin Kedushin Kelkach Litlan Leflugei Ben Zaro Ben Zera Zarat Elavdor. Right? The extreme position of Rashi, right, which is, in the end of the day, the dominant position, is that you can never lose Jewishness, and your grandchildren can't be greater, right? So, and most people don't even agree with the Ramah, which is that an apostate can't lose Jewishness, but the original Aseret HaShvatim can. Right, the majority view is that no, even in the context of the Aseret HaShvatim, that's not what it meant. Right? Is that we don't have to be worried that you're marrying one of the Aseret HaShvatim. And therefore, the people who really worked on bringing back the Aseret HaShvatim, right? A, they're following the halachic position that the Aseret HaShvatim are still Jewish. Right? They're assuming, most of them assume like, that we paskin, as the Tzom Sofer does, like Rabbi Eliezer against Rabbi Akiva, meaning the Aseret HaShvatim are coming back. And they usually make a third move, which is something along the lines of, Rabbi Shmuel David, I'm going to take my guys out for a Siyum tomorrow morning, so at some point I'll need a credit card to take them. Are you here? What? Do you need it this afternoon, or can I take it? You need it this afternoon. So can you... So leave it with Yaakov or something, and... Like in the morning, I was going to take them like 9, and it's like breakfast-ish. What time are you coming in the morning? 9:30? So maybe I'll ask Greg Ginsburg if he's... Oh, you have an extra one? So can you ask him to still finish up Shear? Oh, he's still Shear? Fine. Okay. But the next move, I'll just point that a lot of them make, is not only do they poskim, they're still Jewish. And not only do poskim like Rabbi Elazar, they're coming back, but... Well, they don't need conversion, but why are they looking for that? Because they also think that this is the beginning of the Messianic period, right? They don't think, right? The next move you have to make is not just they're Jewish and they're coming back, but that when the Gemara says they're coming back, it doesn't necessarily mean that Mashiach is coming and magically bringing them back. It means that as part of the lead-up to Mashiach, they're going to start coming back. And therefore, they tend to see our period, right, as the beginning of the Messianic period, as proven by the fact that these people from the Eser Yisrael are coming back. Now, I'm not denying that there are also local questions, which is in each case, in a lot of the cases, they'll convert them to Chumrah, because they'll say, I'm open to you being, right, descended from the Eser Yisrael, and therefore I'm going to work to bring you back to Israel, but on the chashash that you're not, convert you. I'll also note that in many cases, it's actually halachically better for us to assume they're not Jewish than Jewish. Because if they're not Jewish, and then we convert them, then their status is gerim, which means they can't marry a kohen, but they can marry anybody else. But if they were Jewish, but didn't keep kedushin and gerushin the way we did, then they might be mamzerim, in which they can't marry any Jews. So in a lot of the cases, it was actually beneficial to say, listen, we're willing to assume that you're Jewish enough to bring you back, but we're going to convert you and treat you as Gerim rather than as Jews or Mamzerim, right?
If they're not Jewish, then are we not supposed to not proselytize?
So they're not proselytizing. They acted as Jews, and they believe themselves to be Jews, and they're asking to come, right? Another relevant position here was a position of Uziel. Good. So now there is another position by Rabbi Uziel. Rabbi Uziel has the status called Zer Yisrael, which means a lot of things in different contexts, but at least one of the things it means is that even he thinks patrilineal Jews, who are not halachically Jewish, but have Jewish blood, they're, right, meaning even if they need conversion, even if they do need conversion, it's, right, the same normal disincentives, right, where we try to dissuade people from converting don't apply to them, right? That if they want to convert, we don't try to dissuade them, right, at the very minimal level. It might mean other things, right? In modern halachic discourse, sometimes it's used to go farther. Zera Yisrael, the children of Israel, right? In modern discourse, sometimes it even means that we should be mekel and geirus. Ray Ginsburg, I want to take my guys out for a siyum tomorrow, but I don't have a credit, right, for the first pack. Okay, how early are you going to get here?
I'm really going now.
No, are you using it later on? So we take them like 9, so I don't get back too late.
Okay,
so I'll take it. Okay. Yeah, we did the whole first drive to Sean.
That's going to be COVID on one, though, right?
Yes, but okay, so guys, that should be enough for now. Right, but that's really, right, so that there's obviously a lot more discussion.
Just make sure the rules are clear.
What are the rules? Tell them what the rules are.
The rules are to get a coffee drink, right, and a pacer. Now, if you want to play the game, can you combine them into something more? That's up to you guys doing. But I don't want to hear, like, what I don't want is, okay, you know what? Yeah, and I'm going to, my own money, supplement that and get something, like, just coffee, you know, a coffee that you can get chocolate milk also, and a case.
Right,
there
you go. Okay.
Okay.
What? Okay, tell them, whatever the rules are exactly, you'll... That's the rules. Fine? Okay? Yeah. So like I said, so many of the modern, right, discussions about it, just to review. right? The questions they ask are, first of all, do we paskin that in general and apostate Jewish? And even if we do, are the Aser Shvatim different? If you assume that they're not, so then you assume they're really Jewish. That's the first point. Second point is, do we paskin on Rabbi Kiva or Rabbi Elazar, right? If we paskin on Rabbi Kiva, they're never coming back. So, right? So these aren't the Aser Shvatim. If you paskin on Rabbi Elazar, they are coming back. And the third point, is that really messianic? Or is that like the lead up to the messianic era? Right? The fourth point to just note is that, again, in many cases, believing that someone might be Jewish, enough Jewish that I'm willing to put in the effort to bring them back to Israel, but still convert them, is actually a kula, because it means maybe their children, first generation, can't marry kohanim, right? I mean, women, but, right? But they're not mamzerim, so they can marry everybody else, right? And these were a lot of the machlokot. And again, these types of discussion arose over different groups in Ethiopia, in India, and the like. And you'll see discussions with B'nai Menashe, right? The Palakmura that I put over here. But that at least gives you a background to why this discussion, right, is not just a theoretical one. It is, right? It's really, really, right, Lamaisa. And again, Israel has been involved in bringing over Ethiopians, has been involved in bringing over many of the B'nai Menashe, right? So this is very practical in a lot, and there were a lot of rabbis who were involved or were opposed, right? Depending on, are they a Aser Shvatim, right? Are they willing to convert, right? Things like that, right? So this really is a very live issue in modern Israel, and these are the sugyot that they're based on, okay? If you want more Makarot, obviously you can follow up the Makarot that I gave you here, and I sent you two articles in the WhatsApp, right? And if you get your hand in, you know. I don't know. I just did, you know, the press the WhatsApp thing. I don't know. The link didn't work.